the issue of the employer having to search through hundreds of resumes, and they're starting to get a sense that they're going to have a quality candidate coming in their midst.
Yes.
So what is the time frame for somebody, the expectations for somebody that's come in off the street and is trying to seek reemployment with you folks?
Well, first, people have to be out there actively seeking employment before they come for training.
Okay.
So that time frame there is usually a month that we ask for people to be actively seeking employment.
All right.
And then once it's determined that training is what they need, you know, it can be very short depending on if that person knows exactly what they want when they come in or if they need a little bit more time in figuring out what type of training program they need. So
okay.
It really varies from person to person. But once they meet with us at the one stop, we can, and if they know where they want to go and there's a program starting right away, we can get people into those programs immediately. There's really no wait. You know, this is rolling. We're meeting with people every day. We're putting people into training every day.
Mm-hmm. Is it necessary to make an appointment at the one stop?
And people can just stop in. I would recommend calling and making an appointment. That mm-hmm. way, if you're coming and our counselors are all busy, that no one has to sit and wait.
Sure.
So the best way would be to make an appointment, but people are, and businesses, stop in at any time and see us.
And okay. We do know that last month in Hunterdon, we had 15 walk-ins at a time when people didn't even know we were open yet, just within that first month.
Right.
So there's definitely, you know, we're happy to have people walk in.
Absolutely. Sure.
But as Monica said, it's best to have some, always effective to have make an appointment.
Well, we want to just respect people's
right.
time. So we don't want them to come and be frustrated by sitting and waiting for a counselor.
There you go. But so you've got it organized. If you know that somebody's coming in, you can make arrangements to make their time more efficient.
Absolutely.
There is another element to this that's, I think, as I was going through this as a volunteer, that's a little bit different that we really haven't talked about is the youth portion of what we do, which is, I think, is different from what we've been talking about now and how challenging that particular population can be.
Now youth, I'm sorry to interject, but youth is a relative term. So what is your definition of youth in this case?
It's not anyone sitting here.
I know.
I still feel I'm very youthful, Paul.
Good for you.
So, but I don't fall into the youth category according to the federal and state
All
government.
Right.
But we're talking about youth between the ages of 16 and 21.
Okay.
So that's the population that we're working with now. And we do have a different way of working with those youth because obviously their needs are different than someone who's been in the workplace for 20 years and now has been laid off from a position.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a program called the Youth Employment Services Program, also known as the YES Program, that works specifically with those youth. And we have partners in both Hunterdon and Somerset County. We work with Hunterdon County Polytech to help us recruit youth for that program, to find youth that fit the eligibility guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with Middle Earth in Somerset County for outreach to find youth there.
Right.
And then we have two case managers that work specifically with youth in our one stop. And we have we work with Middle Earth. They provide a work readiness program and a work readiness credential for youth. Because,
okay.
again, a lot of these kids don't have experience in the workforce. They don't have the soft skills that they need to be able to get out there and find a job. We can also provide training for those youth, too. But it's more important for us to make sure that they get that they finish high school or they get a high school equivalency certification or some other type of certification. And then, again, the goal is still the same, to get people into employment that aren't just jobs but our careers.
Okay.
So a lot of times we're putting these youth into trainings that allow for what we call stackable credentials,
mm-hmm.
which means they're starting off in an entry-level position, but it's not a dead-end entry-level position. It's an entry-level position where there's room to grow and
right.
go up the ladder.
So 16 to 21, it's hard for me to imagine that a 16-year-old who's graduated high school is looking for a career at that particular point, but
Right. We all knew.
And that's part of the challenge,
yeah.
too. But you try to help that population understand what's realistic.
Right. At some point, are they trying to balance a school and work, or are you?
Well, the youth that we work with are really the most at-risk youth. These
sure.
are youth that have dropped out of high school.
Okay.
So really, our goal is to make sure that they get their high school equivalency, mm-hmm. And that they have some of those skills. You know, because when you stay in high school, it's more than just the educational learning that happens. There's a whole social piece
right.
there that happens as well. So if you've been out of school, you're not getting the benefit of that, having to be someplace at a very specific time in the morning,
right.
having to call school if you're not going to be there. So, of course, those are skills that everyone learns that translate into the workplace. So if you've been out of school, you're also rusty. Those skills are a little rusty.
Sure.
So we work a lot with those youth. And, of course, they present with other issues as well that we also address. You know, if they've got substance abuse or mental health issues, if they have children of their own, if they're homeless.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, we have these youth out there. And we know if we don't put in the time now to them, where are they going to be, you know, 5 years, 10 years from now?
Back on another Hunterdon County plan at some point.
Exactly, exactly. So let's put the services in on the front end and then have good, productive citizens.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more about the One Stop Career Center on HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Hunterdon County. Can you believe we're talking about, August 10th. I find it difficult to believe we're going to be, soon we'll be within, 3 weeks, I guess, the rest of the summer, although lots of kids go back to school, go back to college sooner. So what's happening this weekend? Well, let's see what we can talk about the weather and see what's happening. Bring up some weather here. And for the Philadelphia area, they are talking about hazardous weather conditions. Now, as you know, sometimes we get Somerville and sometimes we get Philadelphia. So very difficult to take it from Philadelphia. So now I'm going to give you the extended forecast for Flemington. Now, we had about a 40% chance of scattered showers this afternoon. It does look like it may start raining, but so far, at least up in the northern part of the county, we haven't had any rain today. Tonight, we're expected to have some scattered showers, only about a 30% chance, and then the possible some thunderstorms, but there isn't a big chance of that, and about a 50% chance of scattered showers tonight. Not looking good tomorrow. There's an 80% chance of heavy rain, and that goes into Saturday night. It could be showers, about 80% chance of showers. And actually, on Sunday, there's showers look likely, and on Sunday night, likely, and into Monday. So this does not look like one of the great weekends, and always feel sorry for people down at the shore because, of course, they expect and they need this business for the summer. So anyway, unfortunately, we don't, at least now, the prediction is not great for the weekend. And so what do we do? Figure out something else to do, because this could go into Tuesday. So it doesn't look like, hopefully, and I know someone I work with is going to be at the shore for the next week, so hopefully at least for the end of the week it'll be much nicer. And sometimes their weather down at the shore is very different than ours, so you never never knew. But there's, as I said, chance of showers on Sunday, then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 8 o'clock in the morning, cloudy, and then, as I said, there was a chance of precipitation about 60%. So there's not going to be the rainfall, maybe a quarter of an inch, half an inch possible. So anyway, that does not look, great. So what should we talk about? Well, I'm Pat Smits, and so we're going to talk about what's happening in the law. I found it a little bit ironic today to hear that chain migration is well and flourishing if you happen to be Melania Trump's parents. They were sworn in as U.S. citizens, I think it was either today or yesterday. And, of course, Melania sponsored them on the green card when they came here from Slovenia. They had green cards only because she sponsored them and was able to bring them in on green cards. And then, of course, after they were here for a certain amount of time, they're able to become citizens. And that's what is called chain migration, which is when a child becomes a citizen and then is able to bring parents from another country in. And that's one of the things that Trump has rallied against from his early days as a candidate. So, who would object? Or I can't imagine who would object to someone who is a citizen bringing in parents, elderly parents, and of course, when you sponsor someone, as Melania did, you then are responsible for their support for 10 years. Now, it doesn't have to be a huge amount of support, but there is some minimum support obligation if they can't support themselves. And in fact, that's one of the things that comes up in my profession. For you, those of you who know me know I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and I limit my practice to family law. So it's not unusual for someone to come in to see me who either was sponsored when they came in or sponsored their spouse. And when I, inform that person that they will have a support obligation or may have a support obligation because they agreed to sponsor the person coming in, irrespective of whether they'd have an alimony obligation. For example, if it's a fairly short marriage, they may have a very short or even no alimony obligation. But if the person is unable to support themselves, they will have an obligation under the immigration status. The other thing that people have been asking me is about passport applications. And one of the things that you have to be aware of, either for yourself or for anyone in your family, is make sure that you do not have any kind of a criminal record. And even in New Jersey, domestic violence restraining order, even though it's not considered criminal, could prohibit you from traveling to Canada. Canada is really scrutinizing passports and scrutinizing people coming into the country, visitors coming into the country. So now's the time, if you haven't, if you have something in on your record from years ago, you may want to consider expungement. You may consider talking to an attorney to see if that offense could be expunged from your record. Because I talked recently to a travel agent who happened to be making travel plans from someone. And for an entire family, they were going to go to Canada and then go to Alaska. And what happened is she found out that one of the members of the family would have been stopped at the border and not allowed to come in. So they were able to get it taken care of. But you have to be very careful about that. And things like DUI, driving under the influence, although it's not criminal in New Jersey, that could be something that would prevent you from crossing into Canada. So a good thing to find out is, and to make sure, if you're traveling to another country and you have anything on your record, find out in plenty of time to try to get whatever it was expunged, or make sure that that's not going to turn into a problem. So as far as passport applications, a lot of times people ask, well, is it going to be a problem getting a passport for my child? I'm divorced. Well, actually, what is needed are birth certificates with both parents' name and on their birth certificates, and the child's birth certificate, of course. And the only time you don't need both parents is if only one parent is on the birth certificate. In other words, the birth certificates of the child, and I misspoke, I don't mean birth certificates of the parents. It's a birth certificate for the child or children with both parents' names, unless, as I said, the child only has one parent named on the birth certificate. And then also you need the child's social security number or an affidavit if there's no social security number. Frankly, I'm not sure how anyone, unless the child was undocumented, would not have a social security number, because all children are supposed to have them. And right after they're born, they now get social security numbers. In the old days, that didn't happen. Now, as I said, the consent form for applying, if one parent is applying for the passport, there has to be a consent form from the non-applying parent. And the only exception to that is if one parent has sole custody. So if, in fact, a parent has sole custody of the child, they don't need the other parent's permission. But in New Jersey today, that's very rare. I mean, almost everyone has joint legal custody, even if they don't have joint physical custody. Now, there's another form if the parent has no idea where the other parent is. And otherwise, what happens is, as an attorney, I have to obtain a court order for my client to obtain the child's passport if the other parent won't agree. Now, all of this applies for children under the age of 16. A 16-year-old would only need one parent to sign. And, of course, you apply at the clerk's office. The clerk here in Hunterdon is very, very helpful. Hours are 8 to 4:45, I believe. Have to check on that. And you can even get a photo taken at the clerk's office. Cost of passports are not cheap any longer, and a child's passport, unless this has been changed, is only good for 5 years. And, of course, as an adult, we have 10 years. But don't ever try to travel if your passport, or I should say on a passport, if it's going to expire in less than 6 months, because it's not going to happen. Okay, well, I'm going to play a couple spots from our sponsors, and for some reason I have Thursday's day, but not Friday, so I'm just going to use Thursday. Okay.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail personnel is your staffing solution. located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Parent Planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Okay, I'm back, and what's happening, there are not a lot of cases of importance. They're certainly important to the litigants, but not many that are really kind of out there, sexy, for people to really be thrilled about. So, however, there is one case that is certainly this indigent defendant. The outcome was great for this indigent defendant, and that was a federal civil rights suit over a municipal judge's jailing of an indigent defendant for non-payment of a $239 fine. And that was a case that really helped to lead to mounting calls for the municipal court reform in New Jersey, and it in fact has. That case was resolved by a $180,000 settlement. Now that was, pretty expensive and doesn't make any sense. I mean, why somebody would be jailed? And so we had the cost of jailing and now the cost of the settlement and, of course, all the time that were spent by attorneys from the Attorney General's office in defending against the suit. I believe that one didn't go out to private attorneys. What else? So there's a new AOC omnibus rule amendments, and I will probably an updated criminal jury charges that I may talk about if we have enough time. What else? Proof for publication. There was a Third Circuit, that's of course federal, St. Pierre versus Revival Masters Credit Bureau, Inc. And as I said, that's a Third Circuit case, federal case. And what happened in that case is the plaintiff appealed from a dismissal of his class action complaint. And what happened is the plaintiff's Easy Pass account fell in arrears and was assigned to this defendant, Retrieval Masters Credit Bureau, Inc., and their private debt collection agency. And they sent the plaintiff a collection letter, and the quote was for, quote, outstanding violations owed for toll evasions. So they were claiming that he was evading tolls. So apparently visible through this window of the envelope, you know, you get all those glassine windows on envelopes. And the letter was sent in one of those, and it was sent to the plaintiff's name and address, and had a quick response code and an account number. So plaintiff alleged that the disclosure of this information on the envelope violated the law, the FDCPA. And the district court dismissed the complaint, ruling that although plaintiff alleged a sufficiently concrete injury to confer standing, meaning that he had the right to go to court, unpaid highway tolls did not constitute a debt. So they were saying that wasn't a debt, and therefore failed to support a violation of the Federal, you know, Creditors Act. So the parties then cross-appealed. The plaintiff challenged the district court's determination that unpaid tolls were not a debt, and the defendant, Credit Bureau, challenged the district court's ruling on plaintiff's standing. In other words, the defendant said he didn't even have standing to bring the case. So this went up to the Third Circuit, circuit with New Jersey, Pennsylvania. They are court, federal trial courts, are any appeal goes to the circuit court. Now the circuit court first affirmed plaintiff standing, ruling that disclosure of legally protected information constituted a clear de facto injury. In other words, it is an injury. You don't have to prove more, because, in fact, that disclosure was of legally protected information. However, the court affirmed the district court's ruling on the merits, and the court agreed that unpaid highway tolls did not constitute a debt under the statute. And the court first ruled that unpaid highway tolls did arise from a transaction because they were imposed for the use of the highway. But the court concluded that the, quote, subject of the transaction was not primarily for personal, family, or household purposes, but instead the ability to take part in the public benefit of the highway system. So the circuit court analyzed the highway tolls to property taxes, which prior cases had held do not constitute a debt under the federal statute. So that case, he won on standing but lost on the merits, and the Credit Bureau lost on standing but won on the merits. So, you know, rather win on the merits, obviously. So there was a criminal law case. Again, that decision, of course, was published, and there was a criminal law case published. And this was a Supreme Court, so, of course, it's precedent-setting. And in this case, the defendant appealed from the appellate division's decision, and the appellate division affirmed the trial court's denial of defendant's motion for judgment of acquittal. And so what happened is the defendant became the subject of a narcotics investigation that led to the execution of a search warrant on a motel room. And police found defendant and several of his children and relatives, along with significant quantities of narcotics and paraphernalia in the room. And he was ultimately convicted by his jury of endangering the welfare of the children. And that was after the trial court denied the defendant's motion for judgment of acquittal, ruling that the state need not prove actual harm to the children. On appeal, the Supreme Court affirmed, ruling that merely exposing children to a substantial risk of harm was sufficient to constitute endangering the welfare of children. The court noted, and this is important, that the endangering the welfare of children involved abusing or being neglectful of a child for which a person had a legal duty of care. The court further noted that an abused or neglected child was defined in part as a child, and this is in quote, in imminent danger of becoming impaired as a result of the failure of either the parent or the guardian to exercise a minimum degree of care by unreasonably inflicting harm or the substantial risk thereof. So the court in this case noted that case law had repeatedly held that the state was not required to prove actual harm to a child to sustain this conviction for endangering the welfare of children. The court ruled the state in this case had sufficiently proven defendant exposed the children in the motel room to a substantial risk of harm by housing them in close proximity and with easy access to dangerous narcotics. In this case, Justice Alban dissented, arguing that harm should be a precondition to the endangering statute. So that was his reason for, not agreeing with the majority. In another dissenting opinion, Justice Ravner agreed that, he agreed with the defendant that harm, meaning quote harm itself, does not mean risk of harm. So that was a Supreme Court case, and it had to do with harm to the child or children in this situation, exposing them to drugs. So, I'm just trying to see if there's anything else on that particular case. There was another tax case. Actually, there was a declaratory injunctive relief to plaintiffs in that case. They were urban renewal entities and had entered into financial agreements with the city of Jersey City. And what happened, to pay initial contributions to defendants' affordable housing trust fund. And then plaintiffs had previously entered prepayments agreements from which plaintiffs agreed to make contributions to the annual service charge in lieu of property taxes. So the plaintiffs filed suit seeking declaratory relief that the prepayment agreement was ultra vires and void ab initio, meaning when something is void ab initio, it's void from the inception. So there are certain things that would be void on the date of the judgment. For example, in my area of law, an annulment can be ab initio, meaning from the day of the marriage, or it could be just from the date of the judgment of annulment. Depends on the facts, of course. And most people, they don't really care because it doesn't make any difference. Their marriage is annulled. So anyway, in this case, the plaintiffs sought payments made under the prepayment agreements and financial agreements with the defendant. The trial court granted judgment to the plaintiffs, characterizing the prepayment agreements as a runaround of the long-term tax exemption law. And so when this went up to the appellate division, I was just looking to see if it by any chance went up to the Supreme Court. Now, would this went up to the appellate division. And I think, frankly, if there's any more interest in the case, it's Journal Square Urban Renewal LLC versus City of Jersey City. So I just, if anybody has a burning desire, you can find the case online at the judiciary site. Well, there's many of you in this area have heard about the case where a student expelled on a sex assault charge can't sue Rider College. I guess they now call it Rider University. Doe. In other words, sometimes people put John Doe in complaints when they either don't know who the person on the other side is, or if there's some reason they want to shield the name. So in this case, a former Rider University student who was expelled over an alleged sexual assault may not bring his due process suit against the school anonymously. That's the ruling of a federal judge. So he has to name himself, herself, and all of the other players. So what's happening now? It's been a legislative veto of an executive branch. Rules have been upheld. In other words, the New Jersey legislature has the authority to overturn executive branch rules if the legislature believes those rules run counter. And that would be counter to legislative intent. But lawmakers' actions may be subject to limited judicial review. And that was a Supreme Court decision, New Jersey Supreme Court. So what else has been happening? As I said, there's not a lot this week. There was a administrative law labor union case. Communication workers of versus the New Jersey Civil Service Commission. This is Supreme Court. And there was an appeal by the defendant from the appellate division's decision affirming, the legislature's concurrent resolution. And this was adopted pursuant to the legislative review clause of the New Jersey Constitution. So under the clause, the legislature could determine whether administrative rules are consistent with the legislature's intent in a statute the rules were intended to implement. So we have, not only do we have statutes in New Jersey. I don't mean the statue, the kind that's being overturned or the kind that's upsetting to so many people because of the connotations. In any event, there was an allegation that and it went all, as I said, it went all the way up. I'm trying to see something that would be meaningful to most people. The court did say that it would not apply a presumption in favor of the legislature, and then they concurred with legislative action, and there was a concurring and dissenting opinion. And the court actually conferred. Okay, let's see what we can pull up some things from our sponsors. I was trying to take a couple minutes to see if there was anything more of interest, and certainly not in that section. So let me see if I can find something else that was reported this week.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Okay, we're back. Program It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits, your host of the program. And we talk on a weekly basis about what's happening in decisions, case decisions that are made by the court, some other statutes that are coming up or have been passed that are, you know, significant. Now, there was a case that probably should have been happening a long time ago. There was a class certification in a case against phone provider for New Jersey jails and prisons. And the suit is claiming that the private company that contracted to provide phone services at nearly every New Jersey correctional facility charges improperly inflated rates. And that has been granted class action status. And frankly, the rates are, you know, outrageous. You know, if anybody, I mean, we see it as attorneys, if we have to have our clients call us, those of us who are attorneys who handle, you know, criminal cases. In any event, I mean, this company has to be making $1 zillion. And of course, one of the concerns is, you know, how did that company get all of that, the right to all of that service, and how much is the state of New Jersey earning from that? And it should be in the public should have knowledge of these things. And this kind of a class is appropriate in light of the fact that all of these people are in the same class. And frankly, it's certainly a case would say, well, why would prisoners have any right to do anything? But frankly, when it comes to simple phone calls, why should they be overcharged and gouged? So that Meadowlands Hospital in Secaucus may continue to pursue claims that it is owed more than $26.3 million in outstanding Medicare and Medicaid payments. All of the hospitals are complaining about the fact that they're being underpaid. So That those are a couple things coming in. There was an insurance case. There was interesting, a third-party defendant, Dr. George Lukakis, appealed from the appellate decision affirming a trial verdict in favor of the defendant. Lukakis was charged with the aggravated arson and insurance fraud after a fire destroyed his property. And that was, the defendant had insured a commercial liability policy. And the plaintiff, RSI Bank, held the first priority mortgage on the property. Following the fire, the plaintiff and Lukakis submitted claims to the defendant, and they both, the insurance company, that was the Providence Mutual Fire Insurance Company, denied both claims. So then the plaintiff and Lukakis filed actions against the defendant. And during the pendency of the civil actions, Lukakis applied for admission into the PTI program following his indictment. So this is what happened. The defendant, in this case, what he did is he waited and he found out he was indicted. Then he applied to go into the pretrial intervention program. And the defendant did not object to Lukakis' admission into PTI. So this is a situation where this third-party defendant applied for admission into PTI. There was no objection, and so his admission was agreed to. So apparently, defendant did not object to Lukakis' admission to the PTI program, subject to his restitution of insurance proceeds paid to plaintiff. So the indictment of the defendant against the plaintiff's claim and dismissal of claims against the defendant, and I guess it's also looking for a specific restitution and dismissal of his lawsuit against the defendant. So ultimately, the PTI court terminated Lukakis' supervision and dismissal of the indictment. And then ultimately, the PTI court transmitted the supervision and dismissal order to this is pretty hard to follow, actually. So he paid the specific restitution and dismissed his lawsuit against the defendant, ultimately. So that's what happens, and I know that it can be pretty maddening if you get into a case and the whole case isn't resolved, but a part of it is, or an attorney handled it in a way that you don't think appropriate. There are certainly many, many appropriate ways to handle these things, and then some that are not. So on appeal, however, the court reversed, and the appellate court said that restitution could only be a condition of PTI. Okay, well, let's get on to something else. And one of the things that has come up, and this is going to be significant, are the new rule amendments updated criminal jury charges. I don't know how many of you out there have sat on a criminal jury, but what happens after all of the evidence is in, there are people. For each defendant, there's a person for each defendant, and so let's get on to talk about that. So these rule amendments will become effective September 1st, and the amendments do not incorporate a proposed new rule that would provide, you know, structure and set forth obligations related to motions in limine. Actually, the Bar Association opposed the proposed rule because it was concerned that the rule did not address the issues So how did this happen? Well, the New Jersey State Bar, as I said, opposed the rule, the proposed rule, because it was concerned that the rule did not address the issues raised in an earlier case. Now, the earlier case, Chow versus Trinitas Regional Medical. So in Chow, it involved a defendant who had filed a motion in limine that sought dismissal of the complaint a day before jury selection. Okay, the appellate division held that the last-minute consideration of the motion and dismissal of the complaint under the circumstances in that matter deprived the plaintiffs of their right to due process. And so the fact that this misuse of the motion in limine occurs sufficiently often to win our notice, despite our repeated cautions against such practice, leads us to conclude it is necessary to state clearly that a motion in limine is not a summary judgment motion, and that happens to be filed on the eve of trial. When granting a motion will result in the dismissal of the plaintiff's case or suppression of the defendant's defenses, the motion is subject to Rule 446, which is one of the court rules that governs summary judgment motions. And that was the decision of the appellate division in Cho. So now, while the association agreed that a rule is necessary to provide more predictable framework for bringing and hearing motions in limine, it cautioned that the proposed new rule would have resulted in higher fees and costs for litigants. Well, it cautioned, about that, and also talked about unnecessary time constraints on attorneys and little, if any, relief for judges in hearing last-minute motions before trial. So the Supreme Court Committee on Model Criminal Jury Charges issued an updated jury charges to address a change in the law related to possession pursuant to State versus Randolph, and to include several new charges. So Randolph raised the issue of the definition of, quote, mere presence, end quote, with respect to a possessory charges. The instructions incorporate language that is unique. And that defendant's mere. So the new model charges have been included as follows. For aggravated assault, healthcare worker attempting to cause or purposely, knowingly, or recklessly causing bodily injury. Computer criminal activity. Access, alters, accesses to defraud. Basically, that's assented to fraud. Obtains, recklessly alters. So these charges may be downgraded from downloaded from a judiciary site, and or at the judiciary's automated model. So in addition to the aggravated assault, computer criminal activity, and tampering with public records or information, there's also unlawful possession of a handgun. This is prior. Well, let me, that is going to be fairly significant in some of these criminal cases. So this is recently passed and also pending legislation, but this one, the Supreme Court Committee on Model Criminal Jury Charges issued updated and jury charges to address a change in the law, and that was related to possession of narcotics. So important, if you're involved in anything like that or know anyone, to find out what the difference is. Well, let me play a couple spots, go to the weather, and then we'll be back with the sports guys.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
USA Radio News.
The search for 20-year-old Molly Tibbetts continues. Now, there was supposed to be a press conference today, although that press conference was canceled. Mary Ellen O'Toole is a former FBI profiler. She believes that Molly went off with someone she knew that night, as does Molly's boyfriend, Dalton Jack. Congressman Steve Cohen said he was joking when he said he wished Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn would jump off a bridge, calling it an obvious attempt at humor. Cohen was addressing a group of pastors when he made the comment.
The big orange president, that's not somebody from Knoxville. He's going to come down here and he's going to endorse Marsha Blackburn. Because Marsha Blackburn, if he says, jump off the Harahan Bridge, she'll jump off the Harahan Bridge. I wish he'd say that.
President Trump will be traveling to West Virginia later this month to hold a rally in support of Patrick Morrisey, the challenger to Senator Joe Manchin. This is USA Radio News.
When posting on most job sites, you get candidates.
I'm the sales director.
I'm the sales director you're looking for.
But when you post on Indeed.com, you get the candidates just right for you.
I'm a sales director with an MBA, over 10 years experience, who's also fluent in Japanese.
With Indeed, you can add screener questions for a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates.
Arigato.
Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Right now at Kohl's, get your family back to school ready with an extra 15% off. Young Men's Urban Pipeline denim is just $21.24. Family tees start at only $6.80. And save on cube storage units, starting at $46.74. Plus, everyone gets Kohl's cash. Get ready for back to school at Kohl's. Select styles, 15% offer valid August 3rd through 12th with promo code SCHOOL15. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
A NASA worker finds himself reassigned after a suspicious package scare near the president's New Jersey golf resort. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has that story.
A suspicious package fell from the sky over New Jersey Tuesday morning, causing some alarm because it contained a note that mentioned President Trump. South Brunswick police say it was attached to a parachute and was making a hissing sound, and included the note that said, NASA Atmospheric Research Instrument, not a bomb. Then it said, if this lands near the president, we at NASA wish him a great round of golf. Trump's staying at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, about 29 miles from where it landed. NASA said the package was part of six balloons that were launched to measure ozone, and a summer student employee wrote the note in a misguided attempt to be lighthearted. They also say the student's been removed from that project.
Your final numbers on Wall Street for the week. The Dow was down 196 points to close the week at 25,313. This is USA